Hi there, we really hope you enjoy this teaching from the Message Trust. To find out more about all the exciting things we're doing, check out our website, message.org.uk.
Anyway, on the occasional times when I stand up, I'm just doing this little mini thing on names of God. And last time I spoke, I talked about God our provider, I talked about Jehovah Jireh, and I said that the ultimate provision of God is Christ, not a white Mercedes or a hot tub. Do you remember that one? Actually, we get that wrong. We hook into these names of God or some theological principles and we warp them. As much as I would like God the provider to be about my Porsche 911 I've dreamed of since I was a little boy, actually it's not about that. It's about Christ as the ultimate provision. And the one I'd look at today is Jehovah Shalom. And if you remember last time, I like to try and find the roots of where these names came about. So in order to do this today, to look at where Jehovah Shalom came from, which is going to unlock something I think very, very important for us today. I'm going to try and whiz through this quickly. We need to go back to the time of the judges in the Bible. Now, for those of you that know the Bible, well, you just have to stick with me on this. Let me give a little bit of background. The time of the judges was a very cyclical time. It was a time when God would provide a leader. I said earlier, leadership's so crucial. The leader would bring order and justice and peace to the land and bring back a kind of a God-centered approach to life. They would worship the Lord their God. And then the people would slip away from following the Lord and lo and behold, disaster would strike and everything would go pear-shaped and then God would raise up a judge again. Then they'd remember the Lord and peace and prosperity would be had by all. It would be like Little House on the Prairie again. Then they'd forget the Lord and it would all go pear-shaped again. So God would raise up leaders required for the job at hand. So they were, the judges were a mix of military leaders, politicians and bare-knuckle fighters, a bit more like Chuck Norris. For those of you who know who he is, my wife actually asked me who Chuck Norris was the other day, and I was very depressed about that for about a week. I know much discipleship required in our house. So guys like Samson, Shangar and Ehud were like the bruisers. Then you had someone like Deborah, who clearly wasn't a bruiser, but was a very wise sort of political leader, etc. Gideon is where we need to go to, who actually is famous with most Christians for laying out fleeces. And Christians have adopted fleece terminology, I think, rampantly inappropriately. When Gideon laid out a fleece, it was for markedly more tense purposes than most Christians would lay out a fleece. Christians lay out a fleece for things like, I don't know whether to go to Morrison's or Lidl. I'll lay a fleece out. No, don't. Just go shopping, for goodness sake. You know, just go to Morrison's or something. Just make a decision. But Gideon was faced with markedly more overwhelming circumstances. He was actually a military leader. And I think, I mean, I don't know whether I read the Bible for a haze of testosterone, but Gideon was actually the first SAS-style commando who led a military raid against overwhelming odds. It's the first special forces tactics you'll see anywhere in history. It's a remarkable camp. We're not actually going to read into that bit, but I just want you to know that. He was the first special forces commando captain, really, and quite a remarkable military campaign that he led against overwhelming odds. So impactful was it that actually in World War II, in World War II in East Africa, there was something called a Gideon Force. How cool is that? Named after Gideon's military tactics. Moving on. We pick up the story in 1100 BC. Just to put that in context, Cadiz is just about to be founded in Spain. And in the UK, we just built a fort in Grimthorpe. So that was what was happening here. But in the world, Greece was just about to slip into the Dark Ages and the alphabet was just emerging across Europe. Got it? So that's the historical context. There you go, puffing book history. Let's pick up Gideon chapter 6, verse 1. We've got to do this. I'm going to read this massive chunk out because you need to get it. You've got to get the context to see how this happened. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because of the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves and strongholds. So get this, God's people are now in hiding. They're in fear of their lives. You can read over one sentence and just move on. But actually, this is a group of people who are in terror and fear of their very lives. So their families are in hiding. It's a deeply unpleasant and horrifying time for everyone there. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites and other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and didn't spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. So everything they grew is being wiped out. Every livestock they tried to raise up for food is being wiped out. It's a terrifying time. They came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count them or their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. And how true is that, people? How true is it that we cry out to God when the chips are down? When you find yourselves stuck wet in the Burger King in St. Pancras, you cry out to the Lord for help. But actually, it is those times, isn't it? How easy we forget the Lord our God in times of prosperity and blessing. And that's when the slippage occurs and they turn back to God when everything goes pear-shaped. How important is it to keep the temperature hot here and our lives hot and front and centred on Jesus Christ all the time? Thank you. I tell you a little, just as an aside, a little routine I've got into when I get in my car early in the morning on my motorbike and I'm feeling a bit grumpy because it's a little bit too early. I've got into a little routine of saying thank you to God for the good things that happened yesterday. Because I think the Lord likes it, but also it orientates my head in the right direction of my heart. Don't just remember the Lord in tough times. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet who said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I rescued you from the hands of the Egyptians, and I delivered you from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them out before you and gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live. But you have not listened to me. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abizurite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites." Don't you love that imagery? The angel of the Lord just came and sat down under the oak. I love that. "And when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, 'The Lord is with you, mighty warrior.' 'Pardon me, my Lord,' Gideon replied. 'But if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian.' The Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?'" There's a command. "Pardon me, my Lord." I wonder if he actually did say that. What? "Pardon me, my Lord," Gideon replied. "How can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my family." Beautiful humility there. "And the Lord answered, 'I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive.' And Gideon replied, 'If I've now found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me. Please don't go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you.' And the Lord said, 'I will wait until you return.' And Gideon went inside, prepared a young goat, and from an ephah of flour, he made bread without yeast, and putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot, he brought them out and offered them to him under the oak. And the angel of the Lord said to him, 'Take the meat and the unleavened bread, place them on this rock and pour out the broth.' And Gideon did so. Then the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread with the tip of the staff that was in his hand. Fire flared from the rock, consuming the meat and the bread, and the angel of the Lord disappeared. And when Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, 'Alas, sovereign Lord, I've seen the angel of the Lord face to face.' But the Lord said to him, 'Peace, shalom. Do not be afraid. You are not going to die.' So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and called it 'The Lord is Peace.' And to this day it stands in Ophrah of the Abizurites." That's the first time you see Jehovah Shalom used. When we talk about God's peace, we talk about warm, fluffy feelings whilst watching the Antiques Roadshow with a scone, cream and jam on a Sunday afternoon. When the Bible talks about God's peace, it's in the context of a man who feels like he's the least, with the least ability and the weakest people around him, who's been called by God to stand against a vicious enemy, massively, massively overwhelmed by enemy forces, to rally his people and lead them into battle with his life on the line. In the Bible, that's when God uses the term, I'm the God of peace. I'm the Lord of peace. In the context of stepping into the hellfire of battle, that's a bit of a different thing. That's why he laid out a fleece, actually. Because he then, shortly afterwards, if you read on, got whittled down from thousands of warriors with him to just 300, to be outnumbered 450-1 in battle. But God had said to him, be at peace. So when God uses the term, it's like this. You're going to go into battle and it's going to be scary and you might feel overwhelmed. And I might call you to do this in a way that seems extraordinary and really scary. But I'm with you. You're not going to die. You're going to be all right. I am the God of peace. Peace, or shalom in the Bible, means wholeness in every respect. Completeness, fulfillment, peace, agreement. A beautiful sense that God is with us. But it is used in the context of terrifying circumstances. Do you understand? So when we often pray for shalom, sometimes it's about me. I just want to have a peaceful day. But when God grants his peace, it's often in these circumstances. And you see it actually, like Acts 18:9, when Paul is preaching and he's facing overwhelming odds. He's proclaiming the gospel in hostile territory and mobs would often surround him. He's in threat of prison and death. And the angel of the Lord appears to him then and says, I'm with you. It's the same thing. I'm with you. Or when Jesus called us to go in Matthew 28, and lo, I'm with you. That sense of peace is with us when we step out. And I can remember, actually, I was just chatting about this with Karen the other night, very late. And I said to her, do you remember this time when God first spoke to us and said and gave us peace? And we both remembered the same thing. I had just stepped out of banking, earning squillions of quids to plant a church on a council estate, and all my money was going. I wasn't paid. Like, you know, we go on about personal support here. Well, I had a similar situation to Andy. I just had to go and get me salary. I had no backup at all, and that was all going, and it was all really tough and horrendous life situations we were dealing with. Drug addicts and prostitution and violence, and it's all very stressy. And I nearly gave up. So I was feeling like within 6 months, I was like, it's horrible. Anyway, as part of my course at Spurgeon's College, I was used to go there 2 days a week, so it was intense. I'd get up in the morning, 5 o'clock, go to Spurgeon's College all day, study, come back in the evening and run a youth group, and then get up the next day that was Tuesday and Wednesday, get up at 5 o'clock, drive to Spurgeon's College all day, come back, run a home group, you know, like I'd just be planting, and then I'd work Monday and then Thursday, Friday, and I'd try and have Saturday off, but then I was doing my essays, and then Sunday I'll be leading the new church plant. It was like a 7-day-a-week enterprise. The commute was 2 hours. It was really like hard work, and after 6 months of all the pressure and no money, I was like, ugh. Just feels like pressure. But as part of my college course, I was tasked to assess another church plant. And so I went to a New Frontiers church. Now, I was quite a reformed, if you know what I mean by that, evangelical, non-really charismatic. I haven't really encountered the power of God at this point. I kind of believed it by reading the Bible, but I didn't practice anything. I was a bit suspicious of people who had their hands up in the air. Sometimes I'd be standing at the back going, there goes another hand, like that, you know. It's really like chippy weirdness about it all. Anyways, but I went to assess this charismatic church, and clearly all that's changed over the years. And they had this prophetic moment. Now, me and Karen are sitting, hiding at the back to assess this church, and the prophets, they had about 3 prophets there, they said, the prophets are going to walk amongst us. And they were literally walking down the aisle like this, and then stopping and looking at people, just like staring at us, you know. Oh, I think I just had a word for Colin then. No, it's like that. No, just like this. And then I thought, this is just like, so I'm writing me assessment notes. Weird, unbiblical, you know, practices. Me. and then they got to me and Karen, this sort of female prophet, and just stopped and stared at me and Karen. And I'm like, what are you staring at me for? Go away. And then, like I said, Karen was really sort of tense. I'm writing more notes. And not very welcoming, staring at me, you know, it's horrible. It's still saying it. And then she did this. She looked at me and she went, I have a word from heaven for you. And I thought, go on then. And she said, I don't know anything about you or what you are both doing. She said, but you're obviously together. Yes. Said, the Lord says to you that what you are doing is right. The path you've taken with your life is right. And his peace is to rest upon you and will carry you through this tough trial that you're going through. So I went from going, to telling her, like, the Lord speaking to me. And then, like, Karen was trying to do a man cry, but then, you know, sort of broke down in the end as well. And we just felt the peace of God like you'd never believe. Absolutely extraordinary. That's shalom. When you're on the edge for the kingdom and you're giving everything, that's when he grants his peace. And he might grant you peace other times in little fluffy moments of your kids and stuff, but actually it's in a context of mission. When you're giving everything for the king and it feels like you want to give up and you're against overwhelming odds, that's when God grants his shalom. In my experience, more so than any other time, when I've been stepping out, I've experienced a peace of God. And I have to say that for us, you know, this is more important for us that we understand this. In the Old Testament times, God's Spirit would visit people in special and particular ways, like Joshua or Bezalel and other characters who said the Spirit of the Lord rested upon them. But we are post-cross, post-resurrection. We're now in the time of the Spirit, where the Spirit's at work in us all the time. We access the presence of God all the time. We can do this at any time now. The Spirit of God's in us now. It's not like special and particular like it was in the Old Testament. And it came at great cost. And I was reflecting, and I haven't got time this morning to go into it, but I was reflecting again on Isaiah 53, which is known as the great exchange of the cross, that by his wounds we are healed. The prophecy that was written 700 years before the, well, actually 700 years before the birth of Christ. The prophecy of the cross, his wounds for our sin, the punishment that brought us peace was upon him. Our peace came at great cost. So who are we not to step out for him and access that peace and live outrageously courageous lives? Because that's where we find our shalom. And Andy has often mentioned in recent months about the twin tracks of blessings and challenges running at the same time. And I have to say that's been my experience too. If we rely on feeling God's peace just when we're happy, we're going to be on a hiding to nothing. Accessing God's peace in times of trial is a phenomenal thing. And I can remember as a young pastor going to visit a family of a young man who had an accident in the Snow Dome in Birmingham. He had the front portions of his skull cut out because his brain was expanding out. He's so bruised and so on. He was on life support. And when I went into the little room where they were waiting next to his bed, we all had tubes in them and everything. Can you imagine that? There's nothing worse than that, I don't think, than, you know, the potentially nothing worse than watching your child die in front of you. And as I went in there, they were in pieces because they were told they were going to probably turn the machine off with their approval later that day or the next day, that there was not much hope. What terrible news to have. And so I was only a young man, a young pastor running this church, and we knelt together actually in this tiny little room with the parents, and we all held hands. And this dad, who I know still he's still around, this dad said in a prayer, Heavenly Father, my son is not mine. He is yours. And I give him back to you now. I'd never heard anything like that at that stage in my ministry. And then he looked up with tears rolling down his cheeks and he smiled and he said, I now know what the peace is that surpasses all understanding. I know shalom. I know Jehovah shalom. It blew my mind. And you know what? Sometimes it don't work out like this. I know that. And we have faced our fair share of trials over the last 12 months or so as a family. But that lad started to pull through in the next hour, and now he's married and he's got kids. Just beautiful. I give my son back, and God pours out his peace and did his work. So practically in 2 minutes, what does this mean for us? Jehovah Shalom, God giving us peace. I think it means that we can step out and take outrageously godly risks. Godly risks. Not human-centered risks, not silly decisions, but we can step out and take godly risks. Sometimes I have a feeling as I read this that God's strategy is going to be a bit weird. Like when you read on, and I encourage you to read on the story of Gideon, sometimes it's going to be a bit, that don't feel right, humanly speaking, but it'll be God's strategy and it will take daring. But that's when we all know God's peace. I think it means we can overcome our fears. I think Gideon, reading between the lines, probably felt a little bit insecure, being the least and being called to raise up a nation in battle. But if God's with you, you can overcome your fears. I think it also says that you may think you're not all that. You may think you're the least. As I read that, I wonder if a few people resonate with that. I feel like I'm the least and from the least. I've only got one Woodward CSC or whatever it was. But actually, they're the people that God uses. Throughout history, God places an anointing on people who think they're nothing. And there's some of you here that's been spoken over your lives for years. And it's a lie straight from the pit of hell. If God decides to use you, he'll use you and he'll place his spirit on you and he'll give you his peace. So don't listen to the lies. I do believe we can access the peace of God at any time. That's something I have to practice. Sometimes when I'm plate spinning, and I love plate spinning, but I notice a plate's actually fallen to the floor and I didn't notice, and stuff's kicking off. I do actually take myself away just quietly sometimes in a busy day, and I just ask God for his peace, actually, or for his presence. It could just be a little walk down the road, or just, you know, find a quiet corner, or just say a prayer. Keep yourself in the word. The things that we keep saying there, keep yourself in the word, keep in prayer. Keep listening to worship music. I like Bethel. Gives me God's peace. I don't know why. As we've said, we also want to give Meg a little Casio keyboard in the office. We've still not done that yet. But that's going to be quite good. I think it also means that we're not the but what if people. But we're the people of why not? Let's have a go. We're not the, you know, the what if. When you're in church meetings, you say, we are going to reach 150 kids, and we're going to set up this new youth club. And what we need to, we need a new Xbox, and we've got to do this, this, this. And someone will go, what if this don't? What if this happens? We haven't got a budget for that. And what if this? Shut up. You know, we're the why not people. Why not? Let's have a go. Why not? Let's do it. It's a God-centered thing. We're the people who say, God's with us. Peace is with us. We're going to have a go and do it. I think God's peace leads to courageous living, not defeatist living. I really do. So we should be the people with the biggest, most outrageous vision on the planet. And I do think, if you read on, we're going to have our own 300 challenges of ministry. But we all know God's peace. We'll be people of possibilities and not problems. Because God will supply a way. And may shalom rest upon us in that. So remember this. Shalom. And there's much more I could say, but I haven't got time. Shalom is the peace of God when you are up against it. If it's godly and you're pursuing his kingdom, that's when you'll access his peace more than any other time. Now, there's a few things we need to pray about in the last 5 minutes. I think we should pray for each other first, that we would know God's shalom today. And maybe some of you just like feeling under pressure. We've got to go again and keep going because that's our movement. We're going again and going again. Well, maybe we could turn and pray for one another. We know God's shalom. So let's do that first, just for a minute. Then I'm going to give us a couple of other things we need to seriously pray for today in the last few minutes together. So let's stand or sit, turn around together, whatever, and pray for God's blessing and peace that we'd live courageously and dangerously for Jesus.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out message.org.uk to find out how you can support or even get involved with one of our teams.